Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's the 4th of July. And an appropriate subject for the 4th of July is the Declaration of Independence, but this one's slightly different. It's the Physician's Declaration of Independence, actually penned 11 years ago by today's guest, but every 4th of July, it keeps getting reprised. And in fact, Dr. Richard Amerling, who's with us, Richard, there's a Doctor's Declaration of Independence that's a little bit along the lines of what you wrote that is in the Wall Street Journal as of April this year by a guy named Dr. Daniel Crabbiato, and it's pretty much along the same lines. He says, so when do we say damn the mandates and requirements from bureaucrats who are not in the healing profession? When do we stand up and say we're not going to take it anymore? I think he's on the same page with you.
I saw that, sure.
Yeah.
He got a lot of tweets.
He absolutely did. So this is a big theme among doctors. Doctors are very frustrated. For our listening audience, to reintroduce our guest, Dr. Richard Amerling is Associate Professor of Clinical Medicine, and he is a nephrologist, a kidney specialist who teaches medical students and young doctors at the Beth Israel Medical Center here in New York City, and he's a frequent on-air contributor on the subject of healthcare in America. So, so why do you think, Richard, that you know, many groups in the United States, you know, they have unions, they're very powerful, they're very influential. It's very hard to change the situation with teachers. You know, they say that tenure should be abolished, but the teachers fight back. They support political candidates. The lawyers have a real strong voice in Washington. What's up with doctors? Because doctors seem to have, you know, over the years, they've really sort of abdicated their level of control over their profession.
We have. It's very sad. First of all, doctors are not that numerous. There are perhaps 800,000 in the country, so we're not a voting bloc of any worth. We're very independent, or we like to think we are. We don't get along well with each other.
So it's like herding cats, right?
Herding cats is the analogy, exactly. Trying to get doctors to agree on anything. So we're very disorganized. We're also extremely busy practitioners. We don't have a whole lot of time to get involved in politics. So we're easy subjects, easy marks. And unfortunately, back in the 60s and thereafter, we gave it up. We gave up the profession to the administrators and the third-party payers. And when we started to let them pay us directly without any really real involvement with the patient, then we started to lose control of the profession. And when you look around at the other professions like law and even dentistry, you don't see that. The dentists have maintained control. The lawyers have maintained control. And no one's looking at the guidelines for lawyers. I mean, no one's telling them how to practice law. No one's forcing them to recertify every 10 years at great expense, as they are physicians now. So, it's very far gone. I think that there is a chance that if doctors are fed up, like this guy Crabbiato, and say we're not going to take it anymore, we can just, by refusing to go along and refusing to accept the third-party payments directly, we can make a final stand. But it's really coming down to the final stand.
Well, what about our organization, the American Medical Association? That is an organization which basically is there to uphold the rights of doctors and to keep the practice of medicine strong and robust and independent, right or wrong?
That might have been its original intent, but it has so drifted so far from there that it's unrecognizable, and it's now a quasi-governmental agency, if you ask me. They do not have wide support in the medical profession. Their membership, as you, I think, pointed out earlier, is maybe 15% of doctors. And
right.
A lot of those are residents who don't really know what's going on yet out there.
Right.
And they get snapped up by the AMA, and they get offered insurance benefits, and they sign on the dotted line, and they become members. But the AMA, for example, supported Obamacare. Now, how could you possibly be a physician-friendly representative organization and support a complete takeover of the healthcare industry? Well, the reason is they're a captured agency. Their interests no longer really align with the physicians. They align with the government that pays them money to use their procedural coding that they have a monopoly on.
Yeah, it's for our listening audience. Let's explain that, because the magic of getting money from an insurance company or from the government is with the code. And the codes proliferate. They're very complicated, very difficult. My office staff spends hours sometimes coding properly so a patient can get adequate reimbursement. And the AMA owns these codes, and they sell the codes to doctors. So they actually, far the lion's share of their income comes from selling these codes, procedural and diagnostic codes, to doctors. And it doesn't come from membership fees. So they really... they have a vested interest in making the practice of medicine more complex and esoteric, and they're the keeper of the magic codes.
That's right. And when you think about it, that was one of the key points that began the downfall of private medical care was the adoption of this coding system and the resource-based relative value scale back in 1990, which was the product of a socialistic Harvard PhD named William Shaw, who came up with this ridiculously arcane system to put a monetary value, a numerical value, on physicians' work. It was the relative value unit system that Stalin would have been proud of, mm-hmm. had he done it himself.
Well, imagine if we did that with plumbers or electricians, for example. If we had a government agency that established that, well, you know, you fix the leaky faucet, but it was a leaky faucet that is, you know, with copper, you get one payment. It was a leaky faucet with a PVC piping, it would be another payment. If you put in one washer, it would be one payment. For two washers, you get a little more, and so on and so on. That's really the equivalent of what they're doing with medicine.
That's right. And if doctors had had any sense or any cojones back in the 90s, right. they would have said, no, yeah. we're not going to do this coding system. It's absolutely insane. It's time consuming. It's ridiculous. It doesn't have any relationship to the reality of what we do. It doesn't reward people for being smart and fast. It insists that you be plotting. It's a horrendous system, and that was the first step down the road to complete enslavement of the medical profession by the coding system. And it's due to get worse, because ICD-10, the International Classification of Disease System, yeah. number 10, is going to be introduced in about a year. It was delayed, fortunately, because this is going to be a real disaster.
Nobody was ready for it. The hospitals just begged them not to introduce it, because it would introduce complete chaos.
And it's still going to. Even in a year from now, it's going to be a disaster. Doctors are going to have to come up with 10 times as many codes now, with ever greater levels of specificity for what's ailing a patient.
And if you don't get the code right, you don't get the money.
Yeah, right, sure. Or if you get paid and they come back and look and do an audit and say, well, you didn't code this correctly.
That's
fraud.
You owe
us the money.
No, but you owe us the money, or worse, Medicare makes it a criminal offense, because it's fraud. Yep. And they can come after you. You know, the guys with the jackets, the FBI jackets, can come and raid your office. I mean, literally, it's happened to people.
It absolutely has.
And it's like, officer, what did I do? You used the wrong code. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, why is a SWAT team knocking my door down, you know, with a battering ram? Well, you know, it's a big crime. Well, you know, here, another problem, I think, is that doctors are, by and large, very idealistic. You know, you don't go into medicine without an idealistic streak. I mean, if you really want to go for the jugular in this economy, you know, you go to business school, perhaps you go to law school, although there are too many lawyers, it's sometimes hard to make a living. You go for, maybe you become an engineer. There's a shortage of engineers. But when it comes to making a killing, medicine is not really the profession to do that in. And doctors are altruistic. And many doctors think that we should have socialized medicine, that, you know, that it's not... doctors should not be involved at all in the economics of medicine. We'll, you know, have a governmental system like Scandinavia or Europe, and that should be the way it operates.
The problem with that is that it doesn't work well in the trenches, where the rubber meets the road, because if you do not have a direct payment for a service, you tend to delay and delay and delay until you have very long waiting lines. And that's what's happened in the third-party socialist healthcare systems in the UK and in Canada, because doctors are not getting a fee for service. They tend to work a shift, and they're not really motivated to see the extra patient or go the extra mile. And this, by the way, is what happens.
They have a fixed salary. It's pretty. It divorces it from an economic incentive, which is good in a way, but it also, from the standpoint of productivity, it could be deleterious.
Yes, and there's no question that this is what happens. This is what happens in hospital systems when they go from a fee-for-service to a salaried system, or vice versa. You know, when you have a house officer who's paid a salary, they tend to grumble a lot about getting up at 3 in the morning to go see a patient in the emergency room. Once they're out in private practice, they jump and they go to the emergency room because they know that they're going to get a fee. So it motivates
That'll get you. I mean, the old-fashioned docs, you know, it's not like this anymore, but the doctor would come see you on a Saturday or a Sunday, bag in hand, and you know, doctors would routinely go into the hospital, make their rounds on Saturday, sometimes wearing their golf clothes because, you know, afterwards they were going to go golfing, but they felt responsible and they were motivated to do that. Now they hire what are called hospitalists to manage patients in the hospital, so the doctors can have a 9-to-5 workload.
Right. So the people that are going into medicine now are expecting to have a very reasonable lifestyle with set hours, and a shift sort of mentality sets in. And even the training, of course, has changed fundamentally since when we went through training. I mean, when we were on call, you would admit a certain number of patients, and then you would follow them all the next day to make sure that they were taken care of.
It'd be like 36-hour shifts sometimes. Yeah, exactly.
Right. You have a night shift, and they turn the patient over at 8 in the morning, and they don't see them again.
Yeah. And, you know, some would say, would you rather have, you know, a doctor who follows you day in and day out, or, you know, a sleep-deprived doctor or an alert doctor? But, you know, it seemed to work, and we got a hell of an education in those days. So tell us about AAPS, because AAPS, you're actually the president-elect of that organization, and it's not for the general public, but it's for the general public to take notice, because it does offer an alternative to the AMA, which in your view is moribund and really doesn't offer hope for the medical profession.
Right. AAPS has been around since 1943, and we have stood in the face of organized medicine taking over the private practice of medicine. So we've opposed managed care. We've opposed, in the past, Medicare and Medicaid. We opposed Hillary Care. We opposed Obamacare. And so we are promoting the private practice of medicine, and we are trying to defend physicians who wish to continue to practice that way. And we will do so. We're a small organization of about maybe 3,500 members, physician members. We're physician-run. We are not captured by our administrators as so many other organizations such as the AMA are. And our late past president, George Watson, used to call us the Delta Force of Medicine. That's really what we are. We have a very effective legal team, and we've launched quite a few lawsuits, including the only lawsuit against Obamacare by a physician organization. We also, back in the day, sued Hillary Clinton and Ira Magaziner over these private meetings that they were holding when they were crafting Hillary Care.
Yeah, there was like a whole sort of a closed-door atmosphere, and it was like whoever was sitting at the table crafting this, what was then going to be the precursor to Obamacare, nobody knew who the parties were.
That's right, and we forced that out in the open, and it turned out that they were all managed care executives and people from that industry, and there were no actual practicing physicians in there.
Wow. So what's your take on the VA scandal? Because you've worked in VA hospitals.
Sure.
And you know, that's part of our medical training usually. So you know, what perspective do you bring to the VA hospital situation? Because for many years, people have touted the VA system. They said, this is a fabulous system. Why can't we just extend the VA hospital system to all the uninsured Americans? Because it's a single-payer system. It's run by the government. It's efficient. They've got great computer systems. It's well-organized, and the vets get good care. So I guess we're discovering otherwise now.
Right, they get good care if they can get seen, which is not.
And in fact, they do get good care because you know the doctors that work at VA hospitals, by and large, are a very dedicated bunch.
Yeah.
You know, the best and the brightest of great medical schools work at VA hospitals.
That's right, and there are some VAs that are superb, and others perhaps not so great. But what happens is in these administratively top-heavy organizations is that more and more money ends up getting spent on administration and things that don't go towards patient care. And the structure set up for the physicians does not reward them for productivity. It rewards the paper pushers to make things look like they're being productive when it turned out, of course, that they weren't. And if you don't have a fee-for-service motive in there in some way, you're always going to end up getting underutilization. In other words, physician productivity is going to go down. This is what has been seen over and over again, and I think the VA is a good example of it.
So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Is there a website for the AAPS, the American Association
Sure.
of Physicians and Surgeons? Do you have a website? Where can people read your manifesto, your Physicians' Declaration of Independence, as they get ready to watch the fireworks this July 4th?
That and all of my writings are on the aapsonline.org website. There's also patient information. There's information for physicians who are looking to opt out of third-party payment and Medicare. There's information on our annual meeting, which is coming up September 4th through 6th in Charleston, South Carolina. It's going to be fabulous. We're going to take on the pseudoscience of evidence-based medicine in a major way, and other things, of course, but that's going to be sort of the focus of the meeting. And we have a lot of other editorialists who have been very productive. We put out an editorial every week. The latest one, one of the recent ones, got a tremendous amount of publicity from my colleague Elizabeth Leet.
Right.
She wrote about the hazards of all these undocumented kids coming into the
yes.
border who have been unscreened for diseases and the potential for spreading very serious infections that we haven't seen here for years.
Yeah, it really is a public health emergency. And, you know, it really, we have gone so far in our progress from the time when we inducted people into this country at Ellis Island. But I visited Ellis Island. The procedures there are much more stringent and much more controlled when there was a big influx of immigrants than they are now. It's a chaotic circumstances, and there's a clampdown on news, and doctors are having their cell phones confiscated, and they're being told, you know, don't broadcast fear to the populace. But there's a real scary prospect with that.
This is, as I see it, an organized invasion of the United States by illegal foreigners who are coming in here and expecting to stay, and then bring more and more. And you cannot have a country that does not defend its borders.
Well, regardless of one's political perspective, because we have listeners of all stripes here, clearly there are public health ramifications to admitting thousands and thousands of people who, you know, especially kids maybe suffering from diseases, they're unvaccinated and they get mixed up with the general populace. This is going to cause a lot of problems, particularly for hospitals in the border areas, but also throughout
Absolutely.
The country, because some of these people are being siphoned off to Boston, to California, to Chicago, all over the country. And, you know, doctors like you who work in hospitals, you're going to start seeing them. They're going to arrive at your doorstep, and you're going to have to offer some form of care. So it's a public health emergency, big time.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So the AAPS, the website is aapsonline.org, correct?
No, aapsonline.org.
Okay, great. So that's for our listeners who want to find out more about it. I want to thank you very much. I want to wish you a very happy Independence Day. And, you know, hopefully one day this revolution will be launched. It's a revolution not just for doctors, but it's a revolution for patients. It's taking matters in our own hands and taking responsibility for our health in conjunction with doctors who care and who are thoughtful about medicine like you are. So thank you very much for being you.
Great pleasure talking with you, Ron.
Dr. Richard Amerling. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Very happy 4th of July to all of you.